person you put up there ain't the person that comes back. It may look like that person, but it ain't that person. Because whatever lives in the ground beyond the pet cemetery ain't human at all. The Indians knew that. They stopped using that burial ground when the ground went sour. Don't think about doing it, Lewis. The place gets holier, but the place is evil.
Welcome to Now Playing's Pet Cemetery Retrospective Series.
Today is Thanksgiving Day for cats, but only if they came back from the dead.
Part of the Now Playing Stephen King movie series.
A place to bury our pets and remember them. Well, it seems scary, but it's not.
Hosted by Arnie.
Are you happy, Mommy?
Stuart.
I'm sure things will be fine.
I'm not.
And Jacob.
Scared you, didn't I?
Join us at NowPlayingPodcast.com each week for a new installment of this series, and keep coming back as we continue looking at all the movies based on the writings of Stephen King.
Daddy's gonna do something really bad!
These podcasts contain detailed plot spoilers and harsh language.
Thank you for introducing that colorful phrase into my daughter's vocabulary.
Listener discretion is advised.
First I played with Dad, then Mommy came, and I played with Mommy. Now I want to play with you.
I don't want to be buried in a pet cemetery. I don't want to live my life again.
Today we're discussing Hellraiser Bloodline.
Wait, no.
Not that one.
We already did that.
Day of the Dead Bloodline.
Done. Crossed it off.
Tremors 5, Bloodlines.
Yes, you made your point. This is a generic title that bad sequels go to.
Is Bloodline what you use when it's, direct to streaming or video crap?
Here's one that I feel is in our future. Wrong Turn 5, Bloodlines.
Yeah, we haven't done that series yet. Somebody show me the exit line. That's what I want. Get me out of this.
I guess we're discussing Pet Cemetery Bloodlines. Starring Jackson White, Forrest Goodluck. Is it really good luck if you're in Pet Cemetery Bloodlines?
Yeah, he needs more luck than he's been getting.
Jack Mulhern, Henry Thomas, Natalie Allen Lind, Isabella Starr LeBlanc, Samantha Mathis, with Pam Grier and David Duchovny, directed by Lindsay Anderson Beer. This is Arnie, co-host of Now Playing.
And Stuart.
And this is the co-host who's always a good boy pretending to love Jesus, Jacob.
Okay, I've been trying to track this one for years. I had heard this rumor they were making another one. I thought theatrically. I thought, it wasn't a big hit, but that 2019 movie made some coin, and I thought the idea was they'd continue that. I don't even know if what we're covering is a prequel to that movie or the 89 movie. Or just picking up from the book.
This is a prequel to the remake, and you know that because of the timeline. If you watched the 89 movie or read the 80s book, in that case, the soldier that returned from war returned from World War II. But when they did the remake, I did go back and fast forward through that remake and find the scene, and they had updated it to that this Timmy came back from Vietnam. In the remake, they'd updated the timeline. So this is intended as a prequel to the remake, but it's like The Last Voyage of the Demeter, the Stephen King version. There was one chapter in Pet Cemetery that tells the entire story of Timmy Baderman. And I went back and I reread that chapter, and that one chapter is what we have expanded into a full movie here.
Right. Basically, what we have is a streaming service in need of product. And Paramount Plus, that's a big task. I mean, Paramount is, don't get me wrong, it's a successful movie studio, but I don't think it has enough recognizable titles to keep, they have a Fatal Attraction series. Like, if they ever had a hit, do it. Just bring it to Paramount Plus.
To me, Paramount Plus might as well be renamed the Star Trek streaming service between Picard and all of the other series.
Do they have anything else besides that?
That's all I watch on there is Star Trek.
That's kind of the deal, yes. They try lots of things, but Star Trek is the one that works. And yeah, so Pet Cemetery was a hit back in 1989. I feel like that's the one people remember, even though the remake came, what, 4 or 5 years ago. The only reason why I thought it was a direct connection to the remake was the masks, right? There were no animal masks in that 89 movie, and here they're going to try to explain where they come from. And of course, this being the spectacular project that it is, attracting all of this talent, who made you feel the worst? You know, like Pam Grier, 25 years after Jackie Brown, pulling out the shotgun, David Duchovny treading on his X-Files cool.
Pam Grier at least felt like she wanted to be here. David Duchovny, that's another story. You dragged him onto this set.
Yeah, I believe he wanted to dig that ditch, but I think he wanted to jump in the grave. The pain that he's expressing here. Henry Thomas, he's kind of popping up in all of these. We'll see him next week in Desperation. He does all those Mike Flanagan horror movies. And of course, Arnie, I'm wondering if you recognized her. She'll always be my Princess Toadstool, but Samantha Mathis, your crush from Pump Up the Volume, is playing the mother.
I know, it made me feel bad how she's aged. I rewatched Pump Up the Volume not all that long ago, and wow, what a left and right turn. She was also in Under the Dome, as far as Stephen King projects go. So I don't know if Stephen King just has so many projects that people end up in them all again and again, like Henry Thomas, or if once you've been in a Stephen King project, you're in the club and you're on the short list of first people they call when nobody else wants the job.
I mean, I think it's kept Steven Weber employed for quite some time.
He's on that Chicago MD show on NBC now.
Oh, good for him. You can survive The Shining. And of course, who's masterminding this? I did not know this director, and I'm wondering why she got the gig.
It's her directorial debut, so normally you do the homework and go find these people's first films. Well, this is this person's first film.
Okay, yeah. Lindsay Anderson Beers. She doesn't have any genre cred. She doesn't come from the horror world. She's a screenwriter. She has worked before, but her debut was a Netflix teen comedy called Sierra Burgess is a Loser. She has her name on a lot of unproduced Hollywood projects that I hope never do get made.
I saw that. I don't want to see any of those.
The live-action Bambi movie, anyone?
Nope.
Mask, the toy line? I'm not talking about Jim Carrey. Remember, there were some trucks that, I don't know, had a cartoon in the 80s?
Yeah, like G.I. Joe and Barbie are going to team up with them. Isn't that a universe now?
Perhaps. A Silver Sable spinoff movie, a Short Circuit reboot.
I saw that Short Circuit one.
If they make it, we'll have to do it. Yeah, it's not a great list of projects. I'm wondering if maybe it was just the lucky token of a female director was kind of a novelty working in the horror genre and delivered big. Mary Lambert did a big time for the 1989 movie. Maybe they thought Lindsay would be a good luck charm. I don't know. I don't know how you launch a project that, Arnie, as you've already stated, what is the appeal here? We're talking about one chapter of a 40-year-old book. Are we burning to know how Judd Cranstall ended up staying in Maine? That's not a great hook.
No, and especially since you're going to have to cast younger people. Of course, Fred Gwynne is dead. If you can't have him framing the story, do I even want to see it? I don't want to see John Lithgow reprise that role, that's for sure. I'm just kind of blah on this, and if it wasn't that we were covering it, I probably never would have known it was coming out, to be perfectly honest. I guess it does show up on my Facebook feed as a sponsored post, or when I go to YouTube, I see sponsored ads for it, but there wasn't a huge draw here for this. The poster itself doesn't scream Pet Sematary to me. Like you mentioned, it had an animal mask. It's got this guy with an animal mask on looking like he's braying at the moon. And I just wish there was some hook that was really drawing me in. But the remake kind of soured me on the thought of more Pet Semataries. I'd rather see Pet Sematary 2 again with Edward Furlong.
That was the one I didn't rewatch. I did go back and watch the 89 movie and the 2019 movie, but not Pet Sematary 2.
I didn't even bother watching a trailer for this one because I felt like the best hope for this would be just go in blind, not have any, I already had low expectations, but that trailer probably would have just given me lower expectations. Yes. and really given me a doom and gloom. But isn't the draw here, I feel like, isn't it still just like, hey, it's Stephen King, guys, you know Pet Sematary, that's a Stephen King thing, this is Pet Sematary too, you love Stephen King, or is that not a thing? Like, I've never been the King fan, that's never been a real draw for me, but is that still a draw, just like to have Stephen King content out there?
Pet Sematary is one of his biggest. I mean, I still see articles on mainstream media that talk about Stephen King's scariest book ever is Pet Sematary. I think when you look back at the 80s, the one that was too scary for Stephen King to publish, if you know the lore around this book, I think this is one to go to. I definitely think this is one of his highest points. And yeah, if you own the rights to it, I think you would try to mine it.
And I will say this, in terms of what didn't get covered before. You know, we had in both movies this idea that there was something fantastical, an unseen hand that would make these semis run over small children, that would force people to go against their better judgment and rebury their loved ones. But we never really knew what that evil was. And what I heard, the pitch I heard about Bloodlines was it would finally explain what was at the heart of this burial ground that turned you into a zombie. Why did that happen? What did it want? Confronting that monster is something theoretically scarier than a six-year-old with a scalpel.
Yeah, I definitely think there is stuff to explore, especially because as I started watching this one, it reminded me something that I always forget is that the Pet Sematary is not what's haunted. Like, Pet Sematary should not be called Pet Sematary. That is not what's making people come back to life, and I will have to learn that all over again as I'm watching this one.
And in the days of autocorrect, I mean, come on, you could spell cemetery right, right? But let's find out if they did the movie right. Arnie, give them the plot.
The year is 1969, and young Timmy Baderman died in the Vietnam War. His body was sent home to Ludlow, Maine, where Timmy's father, Bill, played by David Duchovny, buries the body in the Mi'kmaq burial grounds. Soon, Timmy is up and walking around again, but he's not the same as he was before. Meanwhile, Jed Crandall, played by Jackson White, is finally leaving his lifelong home of Ludlow, Maine. He's off to join the Peace Corps with his girlfriend Norma, but on their way out of town, Judd and Norma find the Baderman's dog sitting in the road, something obviously wrong with the canine. They walk the dog back to where they see Timmy, and then the dog attacks Norma, biting her arm. Judd gets Norma to the hospital, where she is admitted for a couple of days. Judd and his friend Manny start to look into what's happening with Timmy. At the Ludlow Church, they find records from the 17th century where the Mi'kmaq Cemetery's powers of resurrection were discovered, and deadfalls created to try to keep people away from the cursed land. And Timmy is staying busy. He kills Manny's sister Donna and buries her in the Mi'kmaq land. Donna comes back to life and goes to the hospital to try and kill Norma, but Timmy captures Norma and buries her alive in the Mi'kmaq burial ground. Judd talks to his father Dan, played by Henry Thomas. Dan and some of the other townies knew of the Mi'kmaq curse and are there to protect the town should another evil zombie rise. Now they know Timmy is one of these accursed undead, so Dan teams up with some other town elders to go kill Tommy. In the climax, Dan is killed by the undead Donna, but Manny finally kills his undead sister. Timmy's father Bill is killed, and a few others, including Pam Grier, and it comes down to Judd and Manny versus Timmy. It looks like Timmy will kill Judd, but then Manny is a dead shot with a flare gun and shoots Timmy in the head, killing the undead boy.
No, in the eyes. In the head would be a Romero movie. This shoot him in the eyes. See, it's so different.
And Norma digs herself out of the shallow grave and escapes the Mi'kmaq ground, still human. She and Judd decide to stay in Ludlow to both watch after Judd's widowed mother and to protect the town from the cursed cemetery as credits roll.
And you mentioned that it would be nice to have Fred Gwynn's voice back as we get this opening monologue going. Jeez, I mean, how about someone with a Maine accent? Like anyone that like will show a little bit of emotion reading what's admittedly, a bit of overheated prose.
I will tell you, I went probably like 20 minutes into this film thinking, Judd, what a weird name. Because again, I don't care about most of these Stephen King films. They leave my mind after we're done recording our review. So I'm like, what a weird name, Judd. I'm like, okay, that's got to be some character from the original that like this is their prequel. I'm like, oh, that's the Fred Gwynn character? He don't sound nothing like Fred Gwynn if that's who he's supposed to be.
Who is this actor? I looked him up. He is the son of Katie Seagal, who was the wife on Married with Children. But other than that, he has a couple of credits. But man, is he bad. He is really bad. This voiceover is dead and he is not going to get any better. Somebody bury his acting ability in a Pet Sematary so that he can come back a little bit more animated.
Yeah, but who knew? I bet you Fred Gwynne was never this ripped, you know, like.
That's what blew me away. More than the accent, I'm like, Fred Gwynne was like this hot, like ripped like young man?
Yeah. In 1969, when nobody was working out like that. But yeah, this guy, he had the Arnold diet plan. He was pumping iron and draft dodging. We will see. Yes, this is the story to explain whether you prefer John Lithgow or Fred Gwynne. I think this actor is no closer to one than the other, how that beloved character wound up on the porch at the beginning of the Pet Sematary movie you do like is what Judd's story is supposed to be. In the start here, they kind of set up in this prologue, they show you flashes of Church the cat hissing and the semis rolling by, just to remind you all the stuff you associate with Pet Sematary is in the future. This is 1969, and this is when he's a young man trying to get out of Ludlow.
Trying to get out, but as you mentioned, you call him a draft dodger. He's not really draft dodging himself. We're going to find out his dad paid off a doctor to give him a fake medical condition so that he would avoid the draft.
Bone spurs. I think that was a Trump dig.
Yes, that's why he can serve in Vietnam. I have to ask, though, like, just thinking about the marketing for this, the logistics of, like, how are you going to make money off of this? Maybe they don't care about making money. Maybe they want the tax write-off for Paramount. I don't know, but it feels like for me, look, we all grew up with tons of Vietnam stories because that's what our parents were going through at the time and the aftermath of that. I don't know, doing a Vietnam, and my kids didn't watch this with me, but I would have had to pause this and explain like what dodging the draft is. I feel like if you're doing streaming, you are going for a younger audience, and not that the stories of Vietnam and those veterans are not important. I'm just wondering from a marketing standpoint, is that the best way to go? Like, it feels very dated at this point, and if you're trying to get people who watch streaming, I don't know if that's the way you go.
I think there is a lot of love for Fred Gwynne's characterization of this character, and Paramount has what it has. Again, they made a Fatal Attraction TV series this year.
Does a rabbit get cooked every episode?
I watched it. It's actually not that bad, but my point is that they have the memory. Like, the 80s are still a thing, you know? Like, Vietnam wasn't that long ago, because that's when their big hits are. That's when their new series are going to be. So, I hear what you're saying. Would it be wise just to forget Judd and have a new family move into the place and just do the whole thing over with new contemporary characters? Perhaps. Me being the age I am, I don't mind seeing the Vietnam era. It gives a certain pall, a sort of funereal sadness to this youth story.
And I don't think there's anything wrong with going historical. I don't think we've aged out of World War II stories, and so we've definitely not aged out of Vietnam stories. But this opening here, I kind of like it. The one thing that I was really hopeful for that gave this movie a bright light when I was coming towards it is, I may not know who Jackson White is, but I know who David Duchovny is. And I know he's still a working actor, he still does television, and he may not be at the peak of his career, but I was happy that he was going to be here. It showed that they were going to spend some money on the actors for this, and we're really going to start with him in the burial ground. We're going to just jump right into him burying somebody.
Duchovny, like, look, again, this is just dating us, like, all these references here, but, like, yeah, he had X-Files, and I guess Californication was a hit. I didn't ever watch that, but, like, did he really have anything for the public outside of X-Files? I do feel like that's a name, and that work carries him far, but in the last 20, 30 years, like, since then, what has he done?
Yeah, David Duchovny is ready for his straight-to-streaming horror movie. I think he is not so up there, Arnie, that you should be excited that, yes, 30 years beyond the X-Files, he's doing a Pet Sematary movie. And I know you're trying to find hope where you can. I don't want to squash it. But this opening scene should do a pretty good job because it's really badly directed.
What can you even see in this opening scene? It is like, listen, Hollywood, I know you're shooting stuff at night, but you don't have to make it so dark that it's actually watching it at night. You can still light things properly. It is so dark. And I'm like, yeah, I guess he's burying a body. I guess that's David Duchovny.
Electricity costs money, Jacob. It doesn't grow on trees.
It kind of took me out of it, though, because we see him up there and he picks up the shovel. He puts it in the dirt and then we cut and he's padding down the dirt. And I just picture David Duchovny being like, I don't want to do any real shoveling. You could show me putting it in the dirt and then I'll pat it. But if you're going to get a stunt double here, if there's a hole being dug, I'm not digging a hole.
But Arnie, if he already brought up the story and having rewatched the movies, I did remember the Bederman story. It is in both movies, one a World War II story, one a Vietnam story. It makes sense that they would connect to this character who lost a son in Vietnam and wanted him to come back. That is an understandable reason to do something against your better judgment. Bederman, I presume, is one of these founding fathers that knows that this ground is evil and trying to trick you into doing exactly what he's doing. But he's grieving because he lost his only son, and he's resentful because some of the other founders bought their children out of the draft because Timmy was best friends with Judd, and Judd never got his number called. That was favoritism not shown Bederman. And so anger, resentment, grief, it's led him to throw his son into this ground. But even still, I want to say, you know what you're playing with. And seconds later, your child pops out as a zombie and grabs your dog and kills it and pulls it inside the ground. Like, you're still willing to bring your son home?
Yeah, look, I'm going to compliment this film where and when I can. And I will say, I like that we're going to get into the central conceit very quickly. We're not going to have like 40 minutes of really boring townsy folks set up before we get here. It's just boom, we got our zombie right at the beginning. But yeah, like I could say this just about every character in this film. I never really understand their motivations. Yeah, the fact that he sees his son rise up as a zombie, kill the dog, and he's still protecting him until he decides not to for reasons at the end.
Yeah. Again, you can say, I think we've seen in all the characters that make this choice, it's a mixture of human grief and the evil that's always lived in these woods that the opening prologue talked about, that it tricks you, that this phantom, these whispers, whatever you want to call it. I thought it was the Wendigo was how King actually dramatized it. That doesn't get said here, but there is a spirit that gets into your head and possesses you and makes you make a bad choice. But I'm sorry, kill my dog and you're not getting out of the burial plot. I'm not taking you home.
Stuart likes his dog more than his son. So.
Apparently.
I mean, he flushed his kids into the sewers after we watched Turtle, so.
It's true. And it's even more bizarre because later at the grocery store, and I cannot follow this, but Judd, in packing up, is donating some of his things to the grocery store? You can do that? Believe me, I got a pile of junk sitting right here. I'm going to head down to Schnucks and unload it if I can.
I mean, it was 1969.
Yeah, I think it's more like resale, consignment, used furniture type stuff. I actually knew somebody who did that. My brother-in-law was entering the army and decided to donate absolutely everything he owned and go with just the clothes on his back, and then he was refused for medical reasons and he had absolutely nothing, so.
You donated to Julio's grocery store in Delhi? Like, that's where you bring your old clothes? Anyway, it gets funnier because he runs into Coveney there and the guy is like covered in dirt and blood. And he's like, let me help you with your bloody grocery bags. And brings him to the car, and the whole time Duchovny is like sneering and like, they never called your number. Enjoy your peace at the Peace Corps while my dead son came home with an honorable discharge. Wouldn't in a small town or any town in 1969 know that the son had been killed? Wouldn't that have been well publicized and been something that Duchovny would have needed to refute?
I don't know if you reread the Stephen King chapter on this. I did go back and reread that part of Pet Sematary. And yeah, that was part of it, was that, again, it was set in World War II, but it's the exact same story, is that the son was killed in the war, even got a Silver Star. They're really, you know, they mined that chapter and brought everything from that chapter in here. But the army was looking into it because people had written the army and are like, this supposedly dead soldier is walking around the town. And the army's like, did he fake his death? Who got buried? Is this soldier gone AWOL? What's going on? Yes, people found it very strange in King's book that this person came back dead and is actually walking around. Nobody even seems to know that Timmy died in this one. They just think he came home from the war.
No, he's hanging out at hockey tryouts just like Judd is. Like, we'll see a shot of him. Like, no one's wondering about why this zombie-looking Timmy is hanging around town?
I think you're confused. He wasn't at the hockey tryouts, was he?
It cuts to a zombie-looking dude sitting in the corner watching tryouts.
Wow, I missed that shot. Okay. Yes, you bring up something else that's also bizarre, and that is that as he's dropping off these donations, Judd finds an old photograph. He is best friends with Timmy and this other native kid named Manny, and we don't know why they've had this falling out. They're now all estranged, but I know that if, Arnie, you had just come back from the Vietnam War, I'd probably want to see you before I left town.
I kept waiting for this to be like a big flashback scene because, yeah, they show this picture. They talk about Timmy and Manny and Judd and how they were best friends. Like, by the end of this, they're doing a bunch of flashbacks showing them hanging out in this tree like they're best buds. And I'm wondering, where's the scene with the fallout? Like, this is where I'm wondering about the budget, because this film has scenes that are just missing that need to be there to establish things. And yeah, the whole backstory of these three kids is not there. And it seems like that's a pivotal part of this story. Like, they keep cutting to that picture, keep talking about their friendship. And I'm seeing nothing. I have no idea what happened to these three.
I'll say, though, this feels like Stephen King. A bunch of childhood friends who grew apart. I mean, we're talking Stand By Me. We're talking It. I think that they're doing a good job, better than so many sequels, of trying to give this a Stephen King feel and of trying to stick to the Stephen King prose. It is, again, admittedly one chapter, and they're updating it for the timeline. But I'm going to give this film the compliments where I can. I don't feel it deserves all hate, and I do wish I knew why they fell apart, but that they did as they grew older, it's something Stephen King has put in his fiction time and again.
And I agree with you. I got strong It vibes watching this. These childhood kids, this town where evil comes and goes, and there's people trying to protect the world from the evil in that town, from spreading. Like, there are strong It vibes, and like, look, that's not a bad thing. Like, there's a reason people love even that television movie, I guess, which is goofy to me, but like,
Tim Curry, that's why.
Yeah, it's a good concept. You know, you have these kids and they come together. Like, all of that works here. Like, yeah, this feels like a Stephen King story. And I will compliment that as well, Arnie, that even though I'm not the King fan, like, I've seen enough of these. What is this, number 70-something at this point?
80.
Okay, 80. I know the tropes by now. And so I see that, and that is good about this. I like that Stephen King small town building type stuff that he often does here.
All right, the compliments stop now. Yes, it was reminding me a lot of Stephen King projects we've seen when we have this field with whispers in it. I had to keep telling myself this was not a sequel to Children of the Corn. Everything about it felt like another Children of the Corn, but it's sunflowers, the Children of the Sunflowers. We see that Manny, yes, is giving nasty glares at Judd. Maybe he's jealous that Judd's leaving town. And then he goes and smokes pot with his artist sister out in the sunflower field. And then, help me out with this, starts to see swirly patterns in the flower center and blood coming out of them, and ends up falling on his ass and getting a giant thorn driven through his palm.
I was wondering, like, did the sunflowers grow giant thorns? Like, was it going to grow vine arms and, like, pull them into the fields or something? But no, he just goes to the hospital and gets it fixed up. So I guess it's just, sunflowers don't have thorns, do they? I've never seen one.
No, I grew sunflowers as a kid. No thorns.
Okay, I've never seen a thorny sunflower.
You know, Poison doesn't have that song, "Every Sunflower Has Its Thorn."
But I think the swirl pattern is meant to evoke the Mi'kmaq burial ground, which is the actual sour ground beyond the pet cemetery and beyond the deadfall, all the blockage, the wall of trees that they try to create to prevent people from going. It's this ground's way of speaking to the people and luring them to its evil place.
Look, I'm going to give this film another compliment, and maybe it's because I've seen 80 Stephen King films at this point, and it finally just clicked, but like, we've talked about this before with like Pennywise, like, why is he, a crab or a lobster from space or something, and a turtle from space has to come save everyone? I finally get it. Like, Stephen King, there are just portals where good and bad things come to our dimension, and that's what causes Pennywise or whatever monster he's writing about. It's not some monster that mutated from toxic waste. It is these portals of good and evil, And like, that's what this is. That's what the Pet Sematary is for. That was like a portal to ward off the evil one. And that's why they sacrificed their animals back in the days of the Mi'kmaq. Like, things started clicking finally, maybe because I've seen 80 Stephen King films and like, I finally understood why there's a Pet Sematary, but that's not where you come back to resurrect, because this film gives a lot of data dumps. So maybe that just helped me finally piece this all together.
Okay. I'm glad to know that Bloodlines is feeling essential for you. But I, again, this, everything about it, the tired performances, the random quote unquote horror moments, it's really goofy. Like, let me just help this movie out. It would have been just much cleaner if on the way out of town, Judd ran over the dog Hendrix, right? That within, oh, I've killed the dog. I've got to bring the dead dog back to the farm. I feel terrible. That gets people talking. And then when the dog comes back later and bites Pam Grier's face off, that'll be a moment of surprise.
Why does a bird have to hit this car and stop them?
Yeah, that is so random.
Right. A bird hits their car and they act like the only thing they care about is the dog.
Yeah. To me, it feels like they should have just been able to leave, but this is, whatever this entity is, it's like it wants Judd there. It wants revenge on this family that has been guarding the world from this portal for hundreds of years or something. I don't know. Yeah, let him hit the dog. That's much cleaner than a random bird flying out.
But what I heard in the a lot of monologuing throughout the movie, but in the beginning specifically, is that the animals are spirits meant to protect people from the phantom evil, the Wendigo, whatever you want to call the evil in the woods, Hubie. The animals are supposed to be what ward it off. And so why the evil is able to use dogs and birds and all of that, it feels inconsistent. It feels like if this movie were supposed to explain things that were vague about Pet Sematary, it's doing a piss poor job.
Yeah, I must have missed that data dump where animals are our protectors.
It's fine. Don't go back and look. You missed it. It's all right. You missed three bullets, Arnie. I'm sure you caught some anyway.
The whole opening monologue is about the Mi'kmaq using that cemetery to bring spirits to fight the old ones.
That's why they wear animal masks. It's part of their warrior stance.
Okay.
Here's my hot take. Pet Sematary should never feature this Pet Sematary. It needs a different name. It's confusing. it makes you think that's where people are being resurrected. It is not. Like, that is the dumbest part of all of this, is the Pet Sematary is not needed.
What should it be? Like a frozen yogurt stand? What do you want it to be?
There should just be evil ground that if you bury stuff in, it comes back. You don't need a Pet Sematary.
Well, keep in mind, when the original story, the whole intent was we just bury and bring back a cat. Not that we bury and bring back a boy.
But they don't bury that in the Pet Sematary.
No, but you bury a pet in the cemetery.
They would have if Judd hadn't been under the influence of the evil. I know. Let's move on. Again, my point is, if things like that bothered you watching the original, don't come to this thinking it's going to make it all make sense. They're muddying the mythology much worse.
No, I'm saying, as someone who has never read the books, is not a King fan, that this helps it make sense.
You do feel that way.
If you pay attention to all the data dumps, I actually got something out of that. I'm not saying that makes it a good movie. I'm just saying I learned something from this one that I did not get from previous Pet Semataries.
Okay. I feel like this is actually making it harder to appreciate Pet Sematary.
I never appreciated it in the first place, so I'm not having that problem.
Okay. Well, then you're a little too hard, I think.
That's not a good movie.
They were both middle of the road.
The 89 one was. The 89 one has its definite good qualities.
It's got its fans, but I would not watch that one ever.
My problem with this one being called Pet Sematary is that there's not enough of the Pet Sematary in it. It's all about zombie Timmy in town, and there's very little with the Pet Sematary. There are data dumps about the Mi'kmaq paddywhack, give the Native Americans a bone here, but not enough with the cemetery. We start with David Duchovny burying his son, who we don't even know is dead. We don't know who he's burying. We don't know what's going on when it happens. And then most of the rest of this movie is dealing with zombie Timmy, and not the cemetery, not the Wendigo, none of this other stuff.
I'll agree that, yeah, this is not a standalone film. If you want to really understand everything that's going on here, you should at least watch one of the versions of the original story.
Agreed. But let's just get there, because, yeah, they're using the imagery. They know that we know it. No one is watching this that isn't familiar. Otherwise, they wouldn't have included the fact that semis, oil tankers, are speeding by on the highway and all of that. They know that we know the lore, the tropes of this world, even though they don't really fit. I thought it would have been cool if they were actually arguing about building that road that would lead all those tankers in. I feel like if you're going to do a prequel, you could have more origin for everything in the town.
Prequel's got to stop if we're worrying about the origins of a road in a town. Like, I do not want to...
Well, no, you're missing it, because the evil exploits that road. It's that road that allows it to bring tankers to kill cats and small children. That's its way of getting out. What I hear is a whole bunch of people stayed at this horrible sour ground when they could have gone on and joined the gold rush or something, but they stayed in shitty Maine because they felt like they needed to protect the gates of hell and prevent a demon from getting out. And so, yes, the demon is getting out. It's infected Timmy and it's infected his dog. And now that's prevented Judd and his girlfriend, Norma, from getting away. They were headed to, I don't know why you have to go to Michigan to join the Peace Corps.
It feels like they're heading to Canada to dodge the draft at that point.
That might have been a better right.
They even get accused of that and they're like, no, we're just signing up with the Peace Corps.
Yeah, Judd's strange because they keep posting who's next from the draft lottery. And Judd is like, oh, I'm still not on it. It is like he's clueless to what is happening. And yet at the same time, if he really wants to serve, he could just enlist. He doesn't have to wait to be called. Like, just go sign up. They'll take you today. But it does feel like it would be cleaner if this character were trying to avoid service. And by the end of it, realizes he needs to serve his father's wishes of keeping the evil contained. I feel like that's the story they kind of wanted to tell, but so muddy, this movie. Muddier than this dog that is now gnawing into Norma's arm and making her go to the hospital.
Good visual, good graphic there. I was shocked to see the flesh torn from the bone. I thought it was a pretty decent effect. It made me wince a little bit at the dog bite and think, okay, now they're going to worry about rabies and put the dog down. No, absolutely no repercussions for this dog. Norm is going to be hospitalized, but nobody even thinks about doing anything to the dog for it.
In fact, Duchovny will even say he was a good dog. He must have had his reason. So again, was Duchovny killed and put under the ground for a while? I think maybe he's a zombie because he's just walking through this movie. But no, he is actually supposed to still be human and hoping against hope that his son snaps out from his weirdness. Meanwhile, his son is sitting on the roof, hearing voices, biting off his fingernails and drawing bloody spirals on kill lists and doing everything to indicate that this is all going terribly, terribly bad.
The kill list was a bit much, wasn't it, when he's writing all these names? And I don't know why he's picking those specific people. Is it because they're descendants of the town elders?
Yeah, I took it that whatever this entity is, whispered these names to him because it's so upset that they threw up a bunch of branches to block people's path there. Like, by 1969, you can put up more than branches to stop people from getting there.
Yeah, well, I don't know how many people are really trekking to go see the Mi'kmaq burial grounds, but your point is valid. There could be a more concerted effort, and this is what I was talking about earlier about keeping the road out of the town, to keep people away from this evil sour ground. Yes, this evil is targeting the people that founded the town and have remained and kept it imprisoned because I guess it hopes to get out on the highways and do a whole maximum overdrive thing in the end. I don't know. The mind reels in thinking about what the Mi'kmaq evil will do once it gets out of Ludlow.
Well, it can't get out of Ludlow. It's ground. It needs people, bodies brought back to it.
Yes, to feed it. So it wants everyone infected, and then bringing new, fresh flesh into its mouth. It's described as a mouth.
Maybe it shouldn't have picked Ludlow, Maine to land in, or however it got there.
Right? Yeah. Can I point you downstate to, New York City, if you're really looking for lots of people to eat?
And if we're really trying to diagnose this evil, keep in mind, one of the things I took from the original King book and movie is that it wasn't always evil. The Native Americans used this to bring people back from the dead. The ground turned sour. It wasn't always just trying to bring back evil zombies. It eventually started bringing people back changed. So if you go back to these hundreds of years, they're going to kind of change that history here because there's going to be some flashback to the 17th century. But initially, it's not like this is it, where it has a plan of spreading the evil. It just was mystical lands, a Native American burial ground, where it was overused and used up.
Not only that, but if you go back to the 89 movie, which is the movie that people like, Timmy didn't even come back a killer. He came back insane. He was rabid. He was running around on all fours like a dog and tearing his cheeks off and making people uncomfortable. But he didn't come back to kill anybody. The town just got tired of him and said, let's lynch him. And they, Judd and a bunch of people, go to his house and burn it down. But they just didn't like, I think they describe him as an abomination. They didn't like what he represented. He didn't come back the same. But he didn't come back this Timmy. This Timmy is, yes, a killer zombie who is now, like, crashing Manny's, like, party and dancing with his artist sister to no music but his bones. I guess because he's dead, it's like this creaking waltz as they're moving around. Very bizarre scene here.
Straight from the book, there was a scene of Timmy in the book coming back and dancing with people and being very weird at the dance and people finding him off-putting. So again, they're mining every word of Stephen King's chapter to see how much they can put up here.
You could mine them, but you got to make it make sense. You got to refine that raw material.
I'll say this, Timmy ain't the worst dancer at that party. When Manny's out there doing that whatever to run around Sue, woof. You get voted off first.
Yeah, earlier they were playing The Wait, and I'm like, I think that much of the soundtrack is straight from The Big Chill.
It felt like that, yeah.
Whatever Paramount owns the rights to, right? Like, clearly, that's what's going to get featured here. There are some actual hits from the 1969 era in order to authenticate this period, but yeah, for the most part, this doesn't feel 1969 to me. And there's a lot of stalling before, you know, I guess the first kill is the dog. Hendrix comes for our lovable male worker, Pam Grier.
Yeah, she is an actress who I'll always have respect for. I first saw her in Jackie Brown. I've since gone back and seen her in some other stuff. And once in a while, she'll pop up in modern movies. Here, again, a name, not a top tier name, but a name. Given a absolutely nothing role of a male lady, it's almost kind of funny the way that they portray her as the male delivery person. Again, there's a male delivery person of this name in Stephen King's book. They're really going back to it and giving that role to Pam Grier.
She's part of the inner circle of these protectors of Ludlow, Maine, but I don't know, elephant in the room, she is African-American, which would mean she would have very different origins coming to be. Like, I don't think she would have been one of the original protectors of this town.
I agree. I thought about that as well, that yes, if you're literally calling it bloodlines and you're talking about ancestry, it does beg some questions as to how everyone in 1969 in small town Maine is getting along with no racial hostility. But hey, again, that's why I say this feels so contemporary. This doesn't feel like 1969. And Pam Grier was cast real late. They shot half of this movie before they brought her on, so
she's only got like two or three scenes.
It's rewriting. I think they recognized that they needed to introduce the idea of the Founding Fathers earlier. As Judd is going around saying goodbye to everyone, she has a moment with the mayor where they're whispering about, we found a grave dug at Micmac.
Is that who that character was? They never establish him, and he's part of that inner circle, too, at the end. He's going to get killed, but I never knew who that guy was.
Yeah, he's the mayor of Ludlow, and he and the sheriff are all up in arms. They're on the lookout for a zombie because they know what happens when someone gets buried there, and they note that it's big enough for a dog, that hole. Even bigger is, I think, what they said. So they should probably figure out it's Timmy if he's acting this weird and, you know, muttering their names and wandering around with a gun and dancing badly. But I think they think that it's Hendrix, which is why when Pam Grier kills it after it comes for her face, they're hoping it's all over.
Here's perhaps the biggest failing of this movie or straight to streaming thing, content for a streaming service. I don't even know if I want to call it a movie. But look, she's a male woman. dogs. They don't like each other. That's like a long established joke in American culture, at least. And there's no reference to that. Like, I feel like Pam Grier, they brought her in to do more of the campy stuff, but there's not any campy stuff. It's just bad.
Yeah, I know that if I were bringing Pam Grier and giving her a shotgun, I'd be giving her one-liners and being like, oh, hell no, when the dog is coming at the male person. Yes, you're right. You would make this a laugh. And I can't see that this director, these screenwriters, have a sense of humor.
When she shows up all scarred up after the fight, that feels like that's supposed to be a joke.
Oh, it's hilarious. Yeah, she sits down at the diner with a gash in her face, and everyone is like, what the hell happened to you? Yeah, it's a physical bit of humor, but I don't think it's supposed to be. It's hard to know. But yes, they are all part of a cabal of humans that are trying to trap this evil. And now that the dog is dead, they think they have to get Timmy too, because Timmy popped up and acted creepy at her mailbox. And they should know, right? They should know that he died at the war. They should know that he's walking around and acting like a zombie. They should already be on this. But basically, Dan, Judd's dad, spends the night on the porch. And that's his idea of patrolling the neighborhood.
Henry Thomas, you know, I know this man can act well. I've seen him act well. We've seen him in some Stephen King stuff, and I don't want to degrade him as an actor. I do want to degrade him in this performance. I don't know if he's trying to do an accent. It's not a Maine accent, that's for sure, but he just is trying to play this old man, and wow, every line delivery of his thuds to the ground. Maybe he just doesn't want to show up the actor playing Judd. He doesn't want to outperform the star of the film. But man, Henry, I know you can do better than this.
I don't know if you guys have seen the test footage when he auditioned for Elliot for E.T., where like he cries and like it makes me cry. And like I had to remind myself of that video that I've seen when I'm watching this, because I'm like, why would you get Henry Thomas? He is so bad. I'm like, oh, wait, no, he can't actually act. This is where this no-name director that's never done anything that's going to give us a short circuit reboot, maybe. I got to blame the director here, like, because this is a guy who knows how to act.
Right, I agree. Everyone here has given better performances, and the fact that they're all acting like zombies and walking through it, the fact that this feels like a funeral, the whole thing, with nobody smiling, nobody winking, nobody having a good time, I agree. That is a directorial choice. That is something that you correct as you're working with your actors, who are all capable of giving you whatever you're asking for. So let's get into act two of this. Eventually, what I can see as a through line is Judd, in biding his time until his girlfriend is well enough to leave, decides that he and Manny need to find out what's wrong with Timmy. And in doing so, he like goes back to the farm and sees a bunch of corpses lying around. I think mostly animal corpses, and realizes that his friend is eating raw flesh. And then they decide they're going to go to the church and read up on the town records. This is where we get the flashback stuff.
What was even weirder was Bill, David Duchovny's character, like walks up and like, oh, so he knows his son is eating like raw flesh and is still cool with this? Yeah, it just makes things confusing.
Not only that, but later when Timmy goes off to kill Donna, Manny's sister, and comes back bloody, he knows. Like, I think that's the turning point.
That's when he turns, I think, yeah.
Yes. But even then, like, he doesn't kill him. Like, he starts tying up nooses or something like that. I'm just like, isn't he not one of the Founding Father members? Shouldn't he be able to pick up the bat phone and call in Pam Grier and Henry Thomas and everybody?
Do people know to call them if they're like, if you see an animal that's kind of acting like a zombie, call Pam Grier?
All the Founding Fathers are still, they have descendants that are still actively patrolling. So I would think that, yeah, this is your avenging force that you're going to call when you see a weird pet. Zombie dog, Colin Pam Grier.
Yeah, I just don't know that a lot of people know about them. They're the inner circle and they know to call each other. But I don't think that, like, the rest of the town even knows about the Mi'kmaq burial ground.
This is a town of 700 people.
900, but yeah.
Okay, there you go.
But that is like the big secret throughout, is you're wondering, what is Henry Thomas not telling Judd? Why is he so standoffish? And we know he has some secret, and he seems to be happy that his son is getting out of town. Like, that is a big part of the mystery of the plot here, but Yeah, like if it's only 900 people, they should know the history of what's going on, and everyone should just know, like, hey, Judd, yeah, you're next in line to sit on the porch for the next 50 years to see if there's a dead cat walking across the street.
Yeah, did Judd not grow up here? Like, when his dad takes him out to the pet cemetery and he hears the whispers for the first time, I'm like, this is the first time you felt the evil?
If there was a pet cemetery in your small town, you'd go there all the time as a kid.
Yeah, but you don't go past to the evil.
But you'd hear those whispers, like, you would know the lore.
Yeah, and they didn't go past it. Like, they just stood there and looked at the deadfall. So, again, it's angering that Judd is acting like he just showed up here. He should be like a hitchhiker or something that wandered into town trying to get to Canada to dodge the draft.
Or maybe he's already dodged the draft and he's, well, I guess that doesn't work because he would have still grown up in that town.
Yeah, we could rewrite this much better, clearly.
For some reason, he hasn't grown up in this town and he's returning to it.
Yes, he's not connected to this town yet, but he will make the decision to stay here. You could have played with that because otherwise, the fact that these people are always explaining what happens, that we have some random reverend who's like, here are some ancient letters I found in the pipe organ. And we have this historical flashback to the 1600s where we see the original explorer Ludlow come out of the ground and become cannibal.
So they named this entire town after a cannibal as a way to remind themselves of what not to do. They actually say that.
I mean, again, that's the town of sin, that everyone here is paying penance, I assume, for trudging on Native American land. That remains sort of a subtext, but yes. That white explorers came here and...
Yeah, did they, like, kill all the Native Americans and that's why this land is cursed now?
Well, Ludlow ate them.
But he was already a zombie at that point.
Yeah, again, this movie is not going to get deep into politics, but I do feel like maybe Paramount Plus is afraid they couldn't show this in Florida, but yes, white people came to America and brown people were wiped out because of that. I feel like you could dig into this. If they had more money, they probably would have shown more of this flashback, but they can only do a couple scenes, and the rest of it is illustrations in a weathered book.
This film is under 90 minutes with credits, so yeah, I feel like either they didn't have the money or the footage they did have was so bad, they just cut it all.
But it just feels like there's a lot of like random cutting back and forth and callbacks to the old movies that aren't needed. Like at one point, Judd goes outside and finds the photograph on the highway and is almost run over by a semi. Why do we need that? Is that supposed to be a jump scare?
I took it as it was supposed to be a jump scare and, again, reminding us of the movies we liked.
Yeah, but don't remind us of a movie you like if you're not actually in service of that movie, is I guess what I would say. Anyway, the point is, eventually Timmy, yes, kills Donna, and now Donna is going to go after Norma. In the hospital, and we get some kind of semblance of a slasher scenario of her running around up and down staircases.
Is she killing everyone in the hospital? Like, there's a dead doctor with his neck twisted around, the nurse is gonna get it.
It's a small town, so it wouldn't be that hard to kill everyone, but yeah, I love the fact that, like, they do this epic, like, blood spatter on Norma.
It was huge. It shocked me.
Yeah, and then, like, you turn and, like, she got all of that out of a little scalpel to the nurse's neck? Like, I'm not buying it.
Scalpels are fucking sharp. I actually liked that scene. And again, a callback to the original Pet Sematary where you got Gage with the scalpel.
There is nowhere in the human body you could cut with a scalpel that would produce a bucket of blood in the face.
I don't care, Stuart. Like, this is the stuff that I want, especially because I thought Pam Grier is in this film, so it's going to be more campy and just over the top. Like, when I got that blood splatter, I was happy. I was wishing I was getting more of that.
Yeah, I'll agree with Jacob on that.
Well, you agree with Jacob on that because you're accepting the reduction of what this movie is offering. It started out by saying, here's more of an explanation for a book I presume you like and a movie you at least liked one of. And now it's just become, can't we at least have some fun deaths as we go around this very stupid movie? Okay, but that's taken a long time for them to decide that's what they're going to do.
I agree. I praise this film for getting right to the zombie at the beginning. Like, we're not going to spend half the film doing that. But yeah, then Timmy doesn't do a whole lot.
There's no real killing. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought there was going to be more people disappearing in the town because of him throughout it.
The dog dies off screen even. Again, maybe they thought it was more sympathetic than Pam Grier, but we don't get a whole lot of body count if you came here for a slasher. But now that we're at the climax, and Judd runs back to the hospital and sees farm written on blood in the floor with the sunflowers, he realizes that what, you know, David Duchovny should have known all along. We need to put Timmy down. He's not the same as he was before the war. And so we get this posse of founding father fools to be picked off one by one.
Again, I think there's scenes that are missing here. When we get to this climax, this closing standoff at the farm, I feel like it came out of nowhere. Now, I know we saw Donna get dragged off and assume that she got buried and came back as a zombie. Like, I guess that's Timmy's plan, but all of a sudden everyone is on board. Let's go to Timmy's home and burn it down and kill him because he's turning people. Like, I'm like, wait, where did this come from? Like, I guess we just got to wrap it up.
It's because Duchovny realizes that the Native American sister artist has been killed, that he's ready to call it all off and have everyone go after his son. There are two screenwriters on this. It's worth pointing out that the writer of the original reboot turned in a draft, and then this director came in and changed things. I think it was somebody's conception at one point to have this be some kind of allusion to Vietnam, because Timmy has turned the farmhouse. You will see he's dug these foxholes and laid booby traps and all of that. He has essentially wanted to put his family and friends through the hell that he must have experienced overseas.
I learned something from Arnie's plot summary. I didn't realize that Norma was buried in the Badland, not the Pat Cemetery, but wherever you go to get buried and resurrected as a zombie. I thought she was in these tunnels because the camera work shows me tunnels and then shows me her struggling underneath the ground. So I thought, oh, we got to go through these tunnels. Obvious, like, yeah, Vietnam vet, like, how do I handle coming back from the war? I saw that last Rambo film, like, he did this too. But I thought she was in those tunnels because that's what the camera work told me. You didn't cut to another scene with her buried under the ground, at least one I didn't see.
This ending is extraordinarily confusing. I don't know where we are. Are we in the pet cemetery in these tunnels? Are we at Timmy's house in these tunnels?
Maybe he dug underneath the deadwood to get to the cemetery?
I have no idea where this is taking place. I realized that about midway through. At first, I'm like, oh, wow, the climax is here. I didn't know how long this movie was before I hit play. And so I'm like, wow, we're at the end already. But where are we? And where is Norma buried? I thought she was buried in the tunnels also. It's only at like the very end when she's digging herself out that I realized she was buried in the pet cemetery, but he didn't kill her first.
Which doesn't make any sense. He killed Donna first.
Well, she wasn't captured by Timmy. She was captured by Donna.
But Donna, when she was resurrected, was dead. She was buried dead, not alive.
Yes. No, I understand your point. But Donna had this chick choking her with crutches, and all of a sudden she's under the ground.
Well, where's Timmy? He wasn't there to help bury her?
I didn't see Timmy at the hospital.
No, I know he wasn't at the hospital, but he wasn't there to make sure she got buried, like slit her throat, kill her, so you could bring her back. Like, why bury her alive unless you just want her to live at the end?
Yeah, these are two different movies that got smushed together at the end. Clearly, two different screenwriters, probably different reshoots, a lot of like, oh, we were going to film this, but there's actually 2 cents left in the budget, so we're not, and you're going to just have to allude to it. And so, yes, maybe we should fault the director, or maybe we should fault Paramount Plus for putting together such a shambling production. But yes, it's a real mess as we get to what starts at the Baderman farm. And we have Pam Grier killed in a barn, mostly off screen. We have the mayor killed in the barn. Help me out with this. So the sheriff gets burned alive on the yard. And to get away from the flames, Duchovny goes into the cellar? Like, if my house is burning, my thought is not to go deeper.
I thought they were going to have some, I don't know, exit from the cellar, like in Wizard of Oz or something.
Well, as it happens, Timmy has dug tunnels for them to go through.
Yeah, they didn't know that, though.
No, they didn't go down there to get out through the tunnels. They went down into a cellar to avoid flames. Folks, don't do that.
I agree. Once they got down there and I'm like, oh, there's not an exit door to get out to the backyard. I'm like, this was dumb.
Yeah, it's really bizarre. It's also worth pointing out, Henry Thomas has died tragically.
Well, he's died. I don't know if it was tragic.
Yeah, right. He sang the infamous line, sometimes dead is bleh. He doesn't get to finish it because Donna comes behind him and impales him on his own shotgun. And Manny has to kill his sister. That's having some kind of psychological impact on him as we are stumbling towards, a finale in which basically Timmy told Judd, you wouldn't have survived Vietnam even if your parents hadn't paid for you to dodge the draft. And now this is the test. And I guess Timmy was right, because Judd doesn't win this fight. Judd would have been drowned in this swamp had it not been for Manny.
Manny is the hero of this movie. Manny kills both the zombies. I don't know if that's intentional to make Judd a completely worthless character here, but Judd does nothing heroic. He saves nobody. Norma digs herself out of the grave.
I was blown away by that. I'm like, what does Judd do at the end here except almost drown?
Yes. He's not even equipped, to face these Vietnam horrors. He would have died in Vietnam. I guess that's the implication that Timmy is putting on him is true. And so Judd, I'm not sure why he is our central character.
They needed to give Judd something to do. They needed to give Judd a reason for being our main character. We've been following him most of the movie. I do like Manny better. I think that Goodluck is a better actor. I think he's giving a more affable performance. I like it better when he's on screen than this Judd. But Judd is supposedly the main character and does nothing of use. I mean, you make this Judd look like a completely ineffective character as a result of this movie. I like Judd less thanks to this movie.
Well, let me ask you, because you care about the continuity, you've read everything, like you have some affection for that 1989 movie. For me, this feels like, why would Judd do anything in the Pet Sematary proper film if he's gone through all of this? Why would he even plant that seed that things could be resurrected? And like, you've gone through this horrible tragedy. It's taken your dad. You've had to see your best friend die with a flare gun through the eye. Your girlfriend almost died. Should Judd even be in this? Maybe he was in that one chapter that this is based on. But yeah, this feels like he shouldn't know all of this stuff if he's still leading people to that cemetery later on, 30 years later.
I think it's even covered in the book and in the movies that the graveyard tempts you, that you're supposed to know not to do it, but it leads you to do it anyway, and that he was only going to do it for the cat because of not wanting to upset little Ellie. It's explained away, but in that chapter in the book, he is much more of an observer. He is not one of the founding fathers of the city. He's not the main character of that chapter. He's telling stories of what others did in that chapter. And having Judd not be the main character, having him be just the tie and have him be a minor character that we know will become a more major character later would work better than the way they do this.
Yeah, you have it be about Manny and like he waves and says, hey, Judd, how's it going? I'll see you later. And then this story happens. You plant your little Easter egg and move on.
Maybe. I mean, I don't think it really matters who you put in the front. I don't like Manny that much that I feel like he's saving this movie or looking like a hero of any kind.
I mean, he's doing all the heroic stuff at the end.
If you want to call that heroic, I feel like we talked about draft dodging. I feel like the screenwriter has dodged the point in their draft of the story. Where's the Wendigo? The ending should not be fighting Timmy or any zombie. It should be confronting the evil, right? As you said, Jacob, you were confused as to why Judd would know all that he knows and still grow old and lead a family into these sour grounds. The answer is because this evil plays tricks on you, and why can't we know a little bit more about that? Why can't we see that manifest in something a little bit more concrete to help us with that? I think that that was the point of the prequel, and I think they totally blew it. But Manny does get to leave. I guess if you liked him better, he's the one that gets to leave Ludlow and not have to participate should any more sequels happen. And Judd will sit there on his porch until the 1989 movie or the 2019 movie comes about.
Well, while we wait, Jacob Stewart, do you recommend Pet Sematary Bloodlines? Jacob.
I mean, maybe because I'm going in, this is a Paramount Plus straight to streaming thing with David Duchovny and Pam Grier. Those are your biggest stars. Like, expectations were low. I was expecting it to not be very good. And guess what? It's not very good. But I found it more admirable than I expected. And that's from a lore standpoint. Like, for someone that's an outsider, this King stuff, I felt like this contextualized the point of the Pet Sematary a little bit more. It made a little bit more sense of all of that. That's the biggest compliment I could give here. I like the idea, and it's that very Stephen King It idea of, you know, a small group of childhood friends or whatever having to protect a town, and it does that. It doesn't do it very well. I know what you're going to say, Stuart. Yes, I like that it does it. It doesn't do it very well, though, like setting up this picture of these three friends and then never really explaining why they had a fallout or what happened to that friendship to bring them to this point when the movie starts that they're all separate and not in contact with each other. Like, that's the problem for me, is not the actual story they're trying to tell. There's problems with how they ended up telling it, but I think that's salvageable. It's the fact that maybe there's no money here. You got a director that doesn't know what she's doing. It's her first time. I just feel like there are scenes cut out or that were never filmed that need to be in here. Established things like Norma was buried in the cemetery, and that's the danger. She's not in these tunnels underneath the house. There's just a lot of real basic things like that that needed to be established and set up. And so, yeah, this is not very good. Like, what did you guys expect? It's, we've talked about why you shouldn't have any expectations that it's going to be good. And it ends up, I kind of just shrug. It's not the worst thing. It's no Mick Garris straight to TV Stephen King story. But yeah, it's not great. It's a not recommend.
Stuart.
You know, I'm going to be harsher then. I think this is among some of the worst. The nightmare is, as we felt like with the Children of the Corn coming back to theaters with that last one and flopping, and maybe that franchise finally being dead, my nightmare watching this movie is like, oh, and now they're just going to crank out Pet Sematary movies for the next decade that I'll be stuck watching.
I mean, I feel like that's a King problem more than this film's problem.
This is worse than most of the Children of the Corn movies. Honestly, when I think about all those sequels, and I remember every damn one of them, this one feels even more scattered, poorly acted, less essential than most of them. And that's saying a lot. Forget the fact that it doesn't live up to the book or either adaptation or even the Edward Furlong sequel with the dog. I mean, this is a really shitty movie.
I think you're overselling how bad it is.
No, I think you've forgotten how much better some of this stuff is. And you've come to accept this factory of shit, which I completely understand. This has been largely a terrible franchise.
Also, keep in mind, I'm not a King fan. I don't care about the book. I don't care if it sticks to that.
Right, exactly. And so it's a curious position to say this helps you clarify things about that you don't care about. I mean, in the end, I don't think it does it well, and I don't think it clarifies that much, and I don't think it's a very scary or funny B-movie. So what you really have is a product that didn't look like it was going to see the light of the day. I mean, this thing was made years ago, and it looked like they might have just let it stay buried, but Paramount needs product. If there's a greedy mouth that needs to be fed, it's Paramount subscribers, because what content do they have?
All 100 of them. I guess it's the Star Trek fans. It's maybe more than 100.
Yeah, if you're not there for Star Trek, you're going to be treated to this kind of crap. And it's really bad. I mean, I want to stress, it's not among the like top 10 worst, but it's, you know, must we split these hairs? It's among the very worst King films ever made.
I saw the same movie Jacob did. I'm shocked to hear the vehemence with which, Stuart, you give this a not recommend, because I really thought about this one and I'm like, it's not great, but it's right there for me on the borderline because it had enough to interest me and it has the benefit of being very, very short. It does not overstay its very meek welcome. I did think that the main actor is an anchor. And I don't mean that as in it anchors the film. I mean, it drags the film down. It really just is a heavy weight on this. But I liked Manny. I actually liked the actor who's playing Timmy. I thought he did pretty good as this stoic, emotionless zombie type. I mean, he's no Bub from Day of the Dead, but he's not bad.
You guys do remember Children of the Corn movies, right?
Yeah.
I remember all of them. I remember Michael Ironside.
This is on the level of like Eva Mendes jumping into the silo mouth or whatever.
No, you go back and watch all those. I'm not going to, but
it really is that bad.
No, it isn't.
I don't know why you feel like this is less trash.
Listen, it's trash, but there can be enjoyable trash.
And Fields of Terror is about as enjoyable as this movie.
I strongly disagree with that.
There's not a lot of funny in this. There's not a lot of like, oh, I'm getting my rocks off at this silliness here. It's just boring and bad.
I found this to be decent enough that I considered recommending it if I had given a shit about any of the characters. That's what I really had to realize at the end, is that I didn't care if any of these characters lived or died. I feel like Judd is not a hero. Manny is apparently this crazy good shot that he shoots two different people in the eyeball. Because, yes, we didn't drive this home, but the only way to kill one of these zombies new to this movie is a shot in the eyeball.
And he does it with a flare gun, and I feel like those always, like, wobble all over the place when you see him fired in a movie. Like, can't believe he hit that small target.
Why didn't he serve? We didn't even get into that. When was his number getting called?
So, it's definitely, I would consider this middle-tier king.
Wow.
Yeah.
But middle-tier king is not great.
Middle Tier King was that Pet Sematary remake. This is like way, way below that.
I'd put it around on par with that Pet Sematary remake. I really would.
Well, you fast forwarded through it. You need to watch it again. It is much better than this.
No, I fast forwarded through it because I remember not liking it a lot.
We're all in agreement. It should just be stressed. We all agree this is a bad movie. But I am shocked at how much you guys are shrugging.
Yeah, it's shruggable. Like, there are things that are set up that intrigued me, and then none of them get paid off. So yeah, I shrug at the end.
You guys are just numb. You're battle shot.
No, during the moment, I was enjoying the mystery. Like, why is Judd's dad? Like, what is the secret that he's keeping? Like, there are things like that that intrigued me. And then, yeah, it all gets farted into a grave at the end where I don't care.
Yeah, I'll agree. By the end, I don't care. But not caring is better than hating. And so I can give this one a not recommend, but a weaker not recommend, and say that we have seen far worse King and will probably be watching far worse King again.
While we're watching more King next week, his desperation continues with something actually called Stephen King's Desperation.
The most apt title for a Stephen King film.
I don't know much about it. I'll be reading the book this week, and my hopes are that it is Mick Garris's best Stephen King movie. And probably still a Red Arrow.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say, is it could be Mick Garris's best, and it could still be one of Stephen King's worst.
You like The Stand.
Yeah, I do. I really do.
All right, so there's that. You can't knock Mick Garris. He made The Stand miniseries you liked.
That doesn't mean I can't knock him. I mean, it's still a cheap-ass miniseries.
I'm just saying that you can't say that everything he's made is bad, whereas I can.
Yes, well, we'll be watching it next week, and getting into our thoughts then.
In the meantime, probably the horror comeback that people are actually talking about right now is The Exorcist. That's what people are watching this past weekend. Believer is out.
They're only watching it because they moved it up from competing with Taylor Swift, because that's what everyone's really going to be watching.
I guess. Not everyone.
I would like to be watching that. Can we cover that?
What's to cover?
It's a concert.
Yeah. I'm sure she sings all those songs I don't know very well. But in the meantime, we're covering this Friday the 13th, Exorcist Believer. And this is a franchise that I think was the first time we ever made available for donors. This is a real, you know, I feel like a lot of times I go back to franchises again and again. I haven't thought about The Exorcist in quite some time. I'm going to have to rewatch that original and then be ready to talk about Ellen Burstyn's comeback this Friday.
Yes, it is the kickoff of our winter 2023 spring 2024 donation drive. We're bringing back a lot of series that we've done previously for our winter spring donation drive because there are a lot of films coming back. But yes, while new episodes of the silver level of this donation drive will come in a few weeks, we are starting off with The Exorcist. And so as part of this donation drive, you can get reviews of all six Exorcist films. We did five back in 2011. And now we're doing the sixth Exorcist film this Friday. But let's talk about the other levels of this donation drive that is just kicking off. Starting in late October, if you donate $10 or more, you're going to get to hear reviews of the six Home Alone films. That's right. For the holidays, we are going Home Alone. Stuart, notorious fan of all things holidays.
I mean, bah humbug, you know, like... I don't think I've ever sat through an entire Christmas movie.
I've heard part three is his favorite Home Alone.
You know what? There are things to enjoy, particularly if you don't like Christmas movies. It kind of works both ways.
So we will be covering six Home Alone films. We normally do five for our silver level. We're doing six for silver level donors this time around.
Damn you, Disney Plus, with that last movie.
It's got a different title. It's Home Sweet Home Alone. That's a different franchise, right?
I bet it's not sweet.
If you donate $25 or more at the gold level, you're going to get 15 total bonus podcasts. In addition to the Home Alone series, we're doing the Beverly Hills Cop series because Netflix has Beverly Hills Cop 4 called Axel Foley. And we are really hoping slash thinking it's going to be released in the next 6 months.
It's been made for over a year. They're ready to dump it.
There's a strike going on. They're going to need to release something, right?
Mm-hmm. That's what I'm thinking.
So we're going to be reviewing a lot of 80s cop films, even though Beverly Hills Cop 3 came out in the 90s. We're going to be doing the Beverly Hills Cop trilogy, the Stakeout duology, if you remember that Richard Dreyfuss, Emilio Estevez team-up.
Uh-huh. Rosie O'Donnell coming in, I think, with a dog later.
Yeah.
Or was that just Tom Hanks and Turner and Hooch, which we're also covering? Plus, Billy Crystal and Gregory Hines in Running Scared, and the greatest movie of all time, Stallone and Kurt Russell as Tango and Cash.
Forget the Expendables. Here is the real, true action team up.
If you go platinum for $35 or more, we have even more buddy cop slash private investigator stories coming from Shane Black. Shane Black, we reviewed the Lethal Weapon films a couple years ago.
The 80s buddy cop franchise, yes. He had other ones, and we're covering them.
Yeah, some films that I never thought we'd get to talk about, and I'm so excited. The Last Boy Scout with Marlon Wayans and Bruce Willis.
It gets better, I think. I mean, Gina Davis and Samuel Jackson is a weird pairing, but there are fans for Long Kiss Goodnight. And then the two that I've seen, the later two, those are really good films. Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, Val Kilmer and Robert Downey Jr. And The Nice Guys with Ryan Gosling and Russell Crowe.
Yeah, some great movies there. Those are our new series for the silver, gold, and platinum levels. Then if you donate $50 or more, we throw in the Exorcist shows. $60 or more, Ghostbusters 5 is supposed to come out in April, and that will still be in this donation drive, so you can get 30 total podcasts with the Ghostbusters series. For $70 or more, you can get the Hunger Games series, because we reviewed those back when Mockingjay Part 2 was coming out. Now, The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes is coming out this November. We're revisiting that, so that is out of the vault and available. Next Friday, after Exorcist, we're reviewing Bird Box Barcelona. So the Bird Box series is available, as is. Next year, we're getting A Quiet Place Day One. We reviewed Bird Box and Quiet Place together as platinum level a couple years back. Those are both available at the unboxing level of donation. And if you go to the killer level, you can get 51 total podcasts, because David Fincher has a new film coming out called The Killer, so you can hear all of the David Fincher and Girl with the Dragon Tattoo series podcasts. A lot of bonus podcasts. Like I said, you can get up to 51 bonus podcasts depending on your level of donation.
That's like a podcast a week. That's amazing. You could go all of 2024 listening to a show there. That's exciting.
Just bonus shows.
Yeah.
Huge amount. We really thank you for your support. It's your support that keeps us on the air, keeps us going. So thank you in advance for your support of our show. And we hope that you are looking forward to these new shows as much as I am. I gotta say, this is one of the most exciting donation drives for me in a long time. I love so many of these movies. And the ones I don't love, I'm looking forward to talking about anyway. So it's gonna be a lot of fun. I hope you can join us. Details are at nowplayingpodcast.com/donate. So thank you in advance for your support. Stuart, Jacob, thanks for visiting the Pet Cemetery with me once again. And until next week, fuck off, hairball.
right about what we done tonight.
What did we do tonight, Judd?
What we did, Lois, was a secret thing. Women are supposed to be the ones who are good at keeping secrets. But any woman who knows her at all will tell you she's never seen into a man's heart. The soil of a man's heart, Lois, is stonier. Like the soil up there in the old Mi'kmaq burying ground.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Now Playing, and we hope you've enjoyed the show.
We played, Daddy. We had an awful good time.
Come back to NowPlayingPodcast.com to hear our reviews of other Stephen King movies, such as Carrie, The Shining, Children of the Corn, Cujo, and dozens more in our archives section.
Place where the dead speak.
Also on our site, hear reviews of other films such as Maniac, The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, A Nightmare on Elm Street, Saw, Riddick, Friday the 13th, the Avengers films, Star Trek, and more. Find hundreds of movie review podcasts at NowPlayingPodcast.com and come back each week for another new movie review.
Let's go, Doc. I don't like this dream.
You said you were dreaming.
Also at NowPlayingPodcast.com/book, you can order Now Playing's film review collection, Underrated Movies We Recommend. This book has 125 reviews about films you probably haven't seen, but you should.
Come on, Doc. Don't make me tell you twice.
Support from listeners like you help keep Now Playing operating.
The whole town's been using this place for generations. Folks make a kind of ritual out of it.
You can find a link to donate using PayPal at the bottom of our website, NowPlayingPodcast.com.
I want to help you because you tried to help me.
You can also help out Now Playing by leaving us a 5-star review on iTunes. A link to Now Playing's iTunes listing can be found at NowPlayingPodcast.com.
I bought you something, Mommy. I bought you something, Mommy.
Now Playing's Pet Cemetery series is edited by Arnie.
Well, sometimes that is better.
Now Playing credit narration by Brock.
Stay with me! That is better! That is better!
The film discussed in this podcast is the property of its respective copyright holders, and no infringement is intended.
The barrier was not meant to be crossed.
The opinions expressed on Now Playing are those of the individual hosts and may not reflect the opinion of Venganza Media Incorporated.
God sees the truth, but waits.
Now Playing is a Venganza Media production, copyright 2023. All rights reserved, and no part of this show may be reproduced, repurposed, or redistributed without the written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated.
The soil of a man's heart is stonier, Lewis. Man grows what he can, and he tends it. Because what you buy is what you own. And what you own always comes home to you.
Part of this story, like, they keep cutting to that picture, keep talking about their friendship, and I'm seeing nothing. I have no idea what happened to these three.
Did people just see balloons raised in front of me? I have no idea why, but I just saw balloons raised in front of me on the graphic when I raised my hand.
Yeah, you need to check your settings. You're probably going to get a clown nose, like a cat face in a minute.
I was about to mention it, and balloons came up in the graphic.
Oh, that's weird.
All right, I'll say what I was going to say, but that just freaked me out. I'll say, though, this feels like Stephen King, a bunch of childhood friends who grew apart. I mean, we're talking Stand By Me, we're talking It.